happen to you, and he just says, well, it doesn't matter, no problem. But in the sense of himself, you know, actually feeling pain through some like direct attack on himself as such, obviously there's no question of that. I think we'll have to finish here. Who's got the attendance sheet? If you didn't sign yourself present. It's our last day of instruction at least, and we have to complete the 18th chapter. 18th chapter has 78 verses. We have 60 minutes, so it's about 45 seconds per verse. So what we'll do, I think, perhaps we won't go so deeply into each verse, but we'll try and look at least at each section up here on the blackboard behind me. I've written down Not actually like alternative headings for the sections, but it's more just to give an idea of which subject is discussed in each section as they appear in your overview book. So first of all, I'll begin. You can just write down these headings or these descriptions that I put on the board, and I'll read a little bit from the purport of the first verse. So, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport of verse 1 of chapter 18, actually the Bhagavad Gita is finished in 17 chapters. It's an interesting point. Essentially we've finished Bhagavad Gita. But the 18th chapter is a supplementary summarization of the topics discussed before. In every chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna stresses that devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. This same point is summarized in the 18th chapter as the most confidential path of knowledge. In the first six chapters, stress was given to devotional service, yogi nam apisaravesham. Of all yogis or transcendentalists, one who always thinks of me within himself is best. In the next six chapters, that's the second set of six chapters from 7 to 12, pure devotional service and its nature and activity were discussed. In the third six chapters, knowledge, renunciation, the activities of material nature and transcendental nature and devotional service were discussed. It was concluded that all acts should be performed in conjunction with the Supreme Lord, represented by the words Om Tat Sat, which indicate Vishnu, the Supreme Person. The third part of Bhagavad Gita has shown that devotional service and nothing else is the ultimate purpose of life. This has been established by citing past Acharyas and the Brahma Sutra, the Vedanta Sutra. Certain impersonalists consider themselves to have a monopoly on the knowledge of Vedanta Sutra. But actually, the Vedanta Sutra is meant for understanding devotional service. For the Lord himself is the composer of the Vedanta Sutra, and he is its knower. That is described in the 15th chapter. In every scripture, every Veda, devotional service is the objective. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Then just a little bit from the next paragraph. As in the second chapter, a synopsis of the whole subject matter was described, in the 18th chapter also, the summary of all instruction is given. So chapter 2 was contents of the Gita summarized, and Krishna was introducing us very briefly to most or even all of the subject matters that were to be discussed throughout the course of Bhagavad Gita. Now, he's going to do a very similar thing, but in retrospect. Go back at least through all the important points draw out the main, like, conclusive facts as far as each of the different subject matters that have been discussed is concerned. So, where do we begin? We begin with the discussion that we've come across on a number of occasions. That is, whether one should work or whether one should be inactive. Or in other words, whether one should do karma yoga or whether one should take up some process like jnana yoga or sankhya or ashtanga yoga. Some process like that which involves not working. Specifically not working, just sitting down and doing whatever may be involved. So, Krishna made it very clear, and I don't think any of us would have any doubt about this by now, hopefully, that at least until the point that you are free from your bodily attachments and any type of mental attachments to the material world, until you've come to that point, which is a very advanced point, then you must work. You must work. So that is the basic point made in section A, which is going from verse 1 to verse 12. I won't go through it in detail, but Krishna makes it very clear, like in verse 5. In verse 4 he says that now I'm going to give my judgment about renunciation. Then he says that acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. Very clear statement. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even the great souls. Verse 6, all these activities should be performed without attachment. This is the idea of karma yoga or nishkam karma yoga. No attachment. You do your duty without attachment, without any expectation of result, as a matter of duty. And Krishna here says in verse 6, this is my final opinion. No more debating. This is definitely the truth in the matter. Of course, one thing we should understand is that when Krishna says that such and such is my opinion, obviously that doesn't mean that this is Krishna's opinion and you may have your opinion and someone else may have his opinion and so many people may have their opinions and Krishna's opinion is just one of those many. No. If Krishna says, this is my opinion, which he has said on a number of subjects, in the course of Bhagavad Gita, at least a few different subjects, then we know that this is fact. This is really the truth of the matter. So this is what Krishna is saying here. You must perform your prescribed duties at least till the time that you are liberated. Then he describes the performance of prescribed duty or attitudes towards prescribed duty in terms of the modes. Maybe you could make a note that one question in the test tomorrow will be that we'll want you to describe three different types of things as they manifest in the different modes. In other words, we heard yesterday about food, food and goodness, food and passion, food and ignorance. So three food, so many are described, more are going to be described just in this chapter. We've heard about faith, we've heard about food, we've heard about, worship, faith. We've heard about austerity, and now we're going to hear about a whole lot more. This is about duty here that is being discussed. Duties or attitudes towards duty in the modes. So we would want you to learn three as they appear in the modes. Sorry? Yeah, 3 times 3. 3 different headings, like food is one heading, austerity is another, faith or worship is another. Then, in verse 11, it's quite interesting. Krishna's basically repeating the message which appeared in one other important verse towards the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Any of you can think of what verse that we've come across previously that this verse 11 reminds you of? At least, like, say, the first sentence of it. No, not exactly. Yeah. Nahi kaschit shnamapi jata tishta chikarma krit karyate hyavasya karma sarva prakriti jargonai. Chapter 3, verse 5. That Krishna is saying it's impossible for an embodied being to give up activity. Embodied means attached to the body. But when a person is liberated from the body, then they can give up their activities. But if you are still embodied or still attached, you can't. So therefore, you must perform karma yoga. Perform your duty, but in that renounced, detached spirit, which helps you to become elevated in yoga. So then, then we go on to the second section from verse 13 to verse 18. Krishna in verse 13 says that according to the Vedanta, there are 5 causes for the accomplishment of all action. Where did we hear about Vedanta Sutra? 13th chapter. Nature, Enjoyer, and Consciousness, which we put on the board here. So this is like a summary of that chapter, that knowledge. Actually, it's from a slightly different point of view, but it's basically that idea. The place of action, which is the body, the kshetra, the performer, the different senses, different types of endeavors, and ultimately the supersoul. These are 5 factors of action. Now, that is a little different from what we heard in the 13th chapter. Doesn't mean that it's contradictory. But the thing is that it's such a subject that it can be looked at from different points of view. Like, for example, here, Prabhupada explains that in the purport, that the term performer, which appears in the translation, that the performer is actually the soul in this context. In chapter 13, we heard how the soul was not acting, but the soul was desiring and then the material nature was acting under the direction of the supersoul. But it is possible to see it from the point of view that the soul is the performer because the soul is desiring. So the soul is ultimately responsible for all activities. If the soul wasn't desiring, then there wouldn't be activities. So in this context, the soul is called the performer. So it's basically explaining along those lines. You shouldn't think yourself to be the only doer, but you should understand the other factors that are there in action. If you think that you're the only doer, Krishna says in verse 16, then you're not very intelligent. Then verse 17. One who's not motivated, has everyone marked themselves present? One who's not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, although he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. So what section of Bhagavad Gita does that remind us of? It's fairly straightforward. Yes, second chapter, from verse 11 till verse 30, all that gyan, the heading there was gyan. How, on the basis of understanding the difference between the soul and the body, Arjuna shouldn't lament, but he should fight and he should kill and not worry about it. So as we said, this 18th chapter is summing up very briefly the main subjects discussed in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. So, right here in the middle of nature and joy and consciousness, you get thrown back to the second chapter. But of course it's all related. It's all related quite closely. Then verse 18 is a clear description of things, a little bit more in keeping with the description given in chapter 13 itself. Jnana, jnaya, parijnata, knowledge, the object of knowledge and the knower, are the three factors which motivate action. And then the senses, the work and the doer are the constituents of action. That's what they're what action is made of. So that is now section B, which has summed up nature and joy and consciousness briefly. Now section C, quite lengthy, from 19 to 40. The three modes, that of course is discussed in chapter 14, and it's very important. Chapter 13 was discussing how the soul is entangled in prakriti. How? Because of the modes. But there was no clear description of what are these modes. So chapter 14 gave that. And because the subject is so important, the modes and how we're entangled in them, then again in chapter 17, the majority of the chapter was devoted also to discussing the three modes. So here, because it is such an important subject, there's quite a lengthy further description of the entanglement of the three modes. There are six headings, so to speak. Knowledge according to the modes, action according to the modes, performers of action, understandings, determination, and happiness, all in the modes. I won't go through them all. I think it's fairly, if you read through them, you'll see it's fairly self-evident what each one is meaning. Some of them are quite interesting, like happiness. Happiness in the mode of goodness is like poison at first, but then it's like nectar at the end. Whereas happiness in passion is the opposite. It's like nectar in the beginning, then it's like poison. So, anyway, these descriptions are there about people who are entangled in the modes and how they do these different things, how they're situated in life according to their situation in the modes. Yesterday the question came up about if people have to be following Shastra in order to be considered in the mode of goodness. And it appears to me that that's really not the case. This person described here in verse 20, who's in the mode of goodness, or this knowledge of the mode of goodness, it's almost like Brahman realization. It's like a hint of Brahman realization, at least. One undivided spiritual nature in all living beings. So that's kind of like the beginnings of Brahman realization. Of course, some people who are in the mode of goodness would definitely be inclined towards scriptures, different scriptures depending on exactly how they're positioned, but that all people who are in the mode of goodness must follow scripture, from what I can see, it doesn't follow. So let us just quickly go on. Skip over the details of this section. As I said, we want you to take any three. So here there's six. Knowledge in the modes, action in the modes, performers of action in the modes, understandings in the modes, determination and happiness in the modes. We already discussed food, faith, austerity. So there's a whole range you can choose from. In verse 40, Krishna sums up, he's summing up about the modes. There's no being existing, either here or among the demigods, who's freed from the modes. Everyone is under the modes. Everyone, at least in the material world, is definitely under the modes. And that is really, you know, such an important feature of the difficulty of being here in this material world. These modes are so powerful, and they're basically ruling all of our activities. So then, section D. Now, it's a discussion about people who are in the modes. They're in different modes. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. Brahman is in goodness, Kshatriya is in passion. Vaishya is in mixed passion and ignorance, and Sudra is simply in ignorance. So they're in the modes, and they're acting according to those modes. But they can act in such a way as to advance spiritually. So first of all, Krishna gives a description, nice description, of the qualities of each of those varnas. So we are all meant to be Brahmins, or trying to become Brahmins. So we should try and cultivate the qualities described in verse 42. Shamo damast pakshocham, shanti rajavam evacham, jnanam vijnanam astikyam, brahmakarma swabhavacham. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmins work, because they're in goodness. So Krishna describes about the four varnas, the types of activity that come naturally to them. And then in verse 46, he makes a summary about the situation in this regard, that if you worship the Lord through your own work, then you can achieve perfection. Own work is obviously referring to these four varnas as just described. Verse 47, Krishna makes an interesting point. Better to do your own duty, even if you're finding it difficult, than try and do someone else's, even if you can do it very nicely. Duties performed according to your nature are never affected by sinful reactions. This is one of the extraordinary features of Varnashram, that if you perform what is really your duty, what is truly your duty according to Varnashram, if you do it very nicely, then there's no sinful reaction for you. In this way, by following Varnashram, everyone became elevated, even the Sudras. They would become elevated because the same principle would apply to them. It's just a question of what type of duty is most relevant. Not that one duty is necessarily better, at least in an absolute sense. But whatever your situation is, you just do that duty. And if you do it nicely, then you'll be elevated. Not that you have to become a Brahmin, then you can be elevated spiritually. No. And Krishna explains, verse 48, last verse of this section, that you may be having trouble doing your duty, and you may think it'd be better to do someone else's duty. But you've got to understand, this is the material world. So every endeavor is going to be covered by some fault. You can't really expect that your duties and everything is going to be easy and you'll be able to do it perfectly. No. But anyway, just carry on and do your duty. Now, starting with verse 49, this is basically summing up about Jnana Yoga, although there is reference made, there's reference made to Dhyana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga also, but it's particularly focusing on Dhyana Yoga. These processes which are not exactly aiming at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this we've called confidential knowledge. It'll become clear shortly why we've called it that. So now in verse 49, we can see that Krishna's talking about a person who's already become successful in karma yoga. They're already very advanced, so they can easily practice renunciation. They're already self-controlled, and they're already completely detached. They're already on that level. So how such a person can achieve the highest perfection? And what is that perfection? In verse 50 says, Krishna says, Siddhim prapto yata brahma. Brahman realization. This is the particular perfection that these people are aiming at. And Krishna is going to explain how. So that is described in verses 51 to 53. Self-control, sitting down, meditating, controlling the mind, and all these things. It is interesting to note that in verse 52, the second of these three, Krishna says, Dhyana Yoga Paro Nityam. Now basically, Krishna is discussing Jnana Yoga, or a process which ends in Brahman realization. But here he mentions Dhyana Yoga, which is part of Ashtanga. So we take it to be like a summary, particularly of Jnana Yoga, but also with reference to Ashtanga Yoga and these other types of yogas which involve inactivity, renunciation. So if they do like this, then they can be elevated to the platform of Brahman. But then in verse 54, Krishna talks about how they may come to pure devotional service. If you can remember our little diagram of the yoga ladder, we had Jnana Yoga going off at a bit of a tangent towards Brahman, but then there was the broken arrow going back to Bhakti Yoga. So this is what Krishna is referring to here. Clearly, we're discussing Brahman realization, actually. But the fact is that if a person gets good association, then they may go from Jnana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. The possibility exists. Depends on association. But anyway, so Krishna puts it in that, of course he doesn't mention getting association, but we would understand that that would be a necessity. Because the person is actually determined to realize Brahman, so how would he change his mind and then decide to go on to pure devotional service? Would only really be through association. And in verse 55, Krishna states very clearly that if you want to achieve me, you can only do it through devotional service. If you were just to carry on trying to realize Brahman, you wouldn't end up realizing Krishna. You have to go through the process of devotional service. So this section then, this is called confidential knowledge. Then verses 56 to 60 are discussing about what's really Nishkam Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, like a mixture of the two. Or something like going from the highest level of Karma Yoga into pure devotional service, into Bhakti Yoga. Here in the previous section we heard about the person who's already advanced going through Jnana Yoga to Brahman realization, or possibly pure devotional service. So this section is dealing with advanced Nishkam Karma Yoga, which goes on to pure devotional service. So verse 56, Krishna talks about his devotee, his pure devotee, Sarva Karma Yapi Sadat.